This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
So, Aaron...
Yes,
I just want to start right off, and I don't care about talking about Raw or SmackDown this week. Is there anything you want to cover on those?
No, I'm okay.
Good. So the Mae Young Classic.
Yes, sir.
We got treated to round number two, round three and four as well, the quarter and semifinals, all in one evening of four episodes. What'd you think of that, how they did
for
that?
For some reason, I was assuming that the semifinals – were going to happen on the live special.
Me too.
I thought that they were going to do, you know, they would have those two matches.
Yeah.
And then they would have some kind of, you know,
filler
recap
match
and interviews and, you know, or something to kill, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then have the two finalists have their match then. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that there were four episodes.
Yeah.
And that the second round finished in two episodes, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to do with those other two. But, yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised. I liked it.
What do you feel about the final match, instead of being at Full Sail University, where they have an established fan base who have sat there and watched this tournament and have been behind it and emotionally caught up in it. Instead, it's going to be, instead of 205 Live, tacked on a SmackDown crowd in Las Vegas, you know, after they've already sat through 2 hours of SmackDown.
You mean how loudly do I think the horrible SmackDown crowd is going to chant boring and have zero reaction to what's going to be a fantastic match?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty terrible idea.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, on
like
the plus
said,
side, it'll be 7 o'clock at night. While they're there, because SmackDown's 3 hours behind. Is Las Vegas 3 hours behind us?
I think so.
So it just seems odd that they're doing the live SmackDown, you know, Tuesday night, essentially 5 p.m.
Right.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like you said, there's a built-in audience.
Yep.
At Full Sail.
Yep.
There's.
Who are smart and know the wrestlers.
Well, and not only that, it's the people that follow this kind of thing. It's
exactly.
Not, you know, the casual wrestling fan who's going to be like, oh, I want to go see John Cena and I don't really care about anything else.
Yep.
You know, which, you know, I'm assuming is what a Las Vegas SmackDown audience.
I mean,
you know,
maybe
very
they'll
well
surprise us. Maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe
that's
they
my
won't.
Hope. I mean, the Cruiserweight Classic didn't have their finals somewhere else. It was at Full Sail, right?
Yep. Yes, it was.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can think, mm-hmm. two things. One, they want to give it more exposure.
Yeah.
But it's still airing on the network, so it's only exposure to a live crowd.
Right.
Or that they're going to use it to further the angle with the four horsewomen of wrestling and the four horsewomen of MMA.
Yeah, I thought about that myself, and if that's what they do, if that's what they do, that's gonna annoy me.
Because I mean,
we're gonna talk about it later, so we'll just
Vegas,
say it now. If
Vegas is it's a fight town.
Yep.
So I think if you see Ronda Rousey and the rest of the women come out.
Yeah.
I think that crowd is going to be more receptive to going crazy than the Full Sail crowd.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you really had a women's tournament. If this is the case, you're really going to have a women's tournament just to force an angle.
Right.
Especially an angle like that you think should be a WrestleMania angle.
I think, like, here's the thing. Like, Shayna Baszler, I really don't want her to win the tournament. And... I think they can have her lose and still further the angle because, she, like I said, like we talked about in the chat, like, you know, they could be like, oh, tough break. And she's like, what, are you mocking me? And then goes after him and then everyone fights. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's funny. As you watch the tournament, because obviously, like, if you're listening to this, you know that it's Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler are in the finals. And as you watch this tournament, the matches that Shayna had, Baszler, whatever, you can tell, like, she had no respect for Zeta. She didn't sell, basically, and just squashed her. And then you watch her with, like, Mia Yim, and, okay, she was a lot different. You know what I mean? And then you watch her with Mercedes Martinez, and she was a world of difference. I mean, she took a whooping in that match, unlike anyone else, but she had the most respect out of everybody, I think, for Martinez.
That was the angle that they were playing, because she trained her.
Yeah.
You know, and everything like that. And they even, Jim Ross even said it, or maybe it was Lita, I don't remember. It's like, oh, this is the first time that she's done the customary handshake before a match.
Exactly, yeah. So she clearly had plenty of respect for Mercedes Martinez, but it's just the way it went, just kind of the way it went down. It was a little annoying, but whatever. That's fine.
Well, I didn't have such a problem with it.
Yeah.
Because in a tournament like this, where there are a lot of semi-unknowns and things like that, you have to give the crowd a reason to get behind one person or the other.
Right.
And, it's old school wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
like the UK tournament, Pete Dunne attacking the guy.
Right.
You know, his opponent for the next day. So.
Right. You know, because you have her. If people don't know who Zeta is or something like that, they're not going to care about a match.
Right.
So you have right off the start, she goes to shake the hand and Baszler doesn't even acknowledge her. And then you're like, the whole crowd goes, hey, she's not a nice person. I'm going to root for her to get her ass kicked.
But it's just what I mean by is I don't even mean the handshake gimmick. I just mean the way she was in the ring. How she sold, or lack
of
selling.
Just how she is in the ring. I don't necessarily think it's a disrespect to the other women. You know, because, I mean, she was fine in the match with who did she fight in the quarterfinals? Candice LeRae?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it wasn't the same as the first couple rounds with her.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. So.
So, I mean, she's... My opinion on Baszler is that she's still inexperienced in this fighting world.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it. That if she has a partner who's a great partner, she's going to do fantastic. But she's not at the point where she can really carry the matches.
Right. Oh, no, she's definitely not.
You know, so in the first round, in the second round, she's kind of going against, inexperienced people also. You know, that would be like putting me in a match against, Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels might look great, but I'm going to look like a fucking idiot.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
You know, so you can't put her.
Right. Well, let's break down the tournament.
Sure.
Round number two. Abby Lath pinned Rachel Evers with the Alligator Clutch. I thought it was a great opening match. For the second round, for the first episode, I thought they both looked good in the ring, and then I think the nice quick finish leaves Rachel looking strong still because she caught her with the pin.
Yeah. Rachel Evers looked significantly better in this match than she did in round one.
Well, because in round one, didn't she wrestle Marty Bell?
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
That's how terrible Marty Bell is. So.
Right. But at the same time, like... You know, I out of all the people in the first round, she was one of the people I was most looking forward to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And she was probably the person I was the most let down in their performance.
Probably like almost mean like the hype he came in with and we never saw it until he talked on Gargano.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. I get that. No, I was pretty excited about seeing this match. I thought I wasn't surprised that Abby Lath got the win. That didn't surprise me at all. But yeah, Rachel definitely looked really good in this match. So
yeah, she at least gave me some hope that in the future she's going to be way better than.
Piper Nevin against Serena Deeb. Piper looked great. I didn't think Serena looked all that great.
Right.
I was surprised how much offense that Deeb got in this match, and with Piper just hitting like. Her high impact moves using her weight. I did like the finish, though. Piper hit that splash off the top rope, and then as she got up, I thought for sure Diva was going to hit the spear and get the pin because she was clutching her stomach when she stood up, but instead, you know, sidestepped her and then hit that Michinoku driver. So I was surprised with the finish.
Yeah. Just like with Rachel Evers.
Yeah.
Piper Niven, she is probably, like, going into the round, she's someone that I was like, you know, I enjoyed her first round match. I thought she was great.
Yep.
But, like, going into the tournament, I'm like, I honestly, I don't know who she is. And I think out of everybody in the tournament, she's probably, like, one of my top two that I was the most impressed with.
Yeah, she goes by Viper on the indies and in Japan in Stardom. There's a lot of girls in this tournament that have wrestled over in Stardom in Japan. Next matchup, Mercedes Martinez against Princess Suhei. And, well, first of all, they were not afraid of laying in the stiff chops with each other.
Yeah.
And then when Suhei locked in that armbar, it looked sick. Like, it looked vicious.
Yep.
But ultimately, I really wasn't blown away by this match at all. There's some great, great moments, but, at the end, I just...
No, I agree.
Okay. And then the final match episode of that episode, Kairi Sane pinned Bianca Belair with her big diving elbow. And wow, now I was thoroughly impressed with Bianca Belair in this match.
Yeah. I still hate the stupid hair thing.
But you heard Impact this time.
I guess, but still, like I said last time.
I know, there's no weapon on the end, I get it, but...
You gotta do something.
As loud as that was smacking, and I looked back, then she wasn't slapping her leg, that was the sound of her hair hitting the other person's body. It sounded like it hurt.
I guess.
It sounded like it hurt, and first of all, I don't know, she looked bigger in this match, somehow, Belair did, than she did in her for opening round match. But I was shocked. I honestly could not believe how good that she really is in this match, especially. She shined. She looked great. These two, they beat the shit out of each other, plain and simple.
Yes.
I absolutely loved it. And then, go ahead.
But again, is it because in round one she fought against Sage Beckett, and in round two she was fighting against Kairi Sane, that she looked much better?
Well... I think she looked better because I thought athletically she looked better. I thought the way she was stringing the moves in, how vicious she was in the ring, how aggressive she was. I know what you're saying. Like, did Kairi Sane carry her and just make her look that good?
I mean, I agree. She was way better in this match.
I feel like being in the ring with someone as capable of Kairi, you know, as capable as she is, definitely helped. You know, helped carry her along and allowed her to show what she could do more. Whereas maybe wrestling Sage Beckett, where they're both of them kind of new and both of them, you know, kind of maybe not being all that aggressive at taking the lead and calling the match and everything, maybe. But I don't know, dude. It was a great match. I was shocked how good it was. And then holy crap, Sane absolutely murdered her with that elbow.
That elbow. Yes.
Holy shit.
I'm trying to remember now if that was the one where
murdered her.
She basically missed the elbow and landed with her hips.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
That was the one. Yeah, she wrecked her. She wrecked her big time.
Yeah, like that. The one thing I love about her elbow.
Yep.
And I mean, Macho Man's elbow is great.
Oh, yeah.
But when Macho Man drops, you can see he lands on his hip.
Right.
You know, right before the elbow goes in, so it kind of lessens the blow.
Yeah.
But man, does she lean in with that elbow, and
she
that
does.
Is the point of contact.
She does. Like, yes,
right
it is.
There. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but man, she murdered Bianca Belair with that, and
not to mention she springboards 40 feet in the air before she does.
Fuck yeah. And what was really cool was, like, out of everyone in the tournament, this is the only real, like, performance center talent, because she's never wrestled anyplace else. She is 100% product of the WWE Performance Center, where I went, I can't wait to see her in the future. I can't wait to see what else she can do or what else she does. Unlike Lacey Evans, where I'm like, I could give two shits left if she broke both legs and never wrestled again.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah. She's done god-awful terrible. We'll get to her, though. Come on. We'll get to her right now. Tony Storm, in the opening match of episode 6, I guess, technically.
Right.
Second half of the second round. Tony Storm defeated Lacey Evans with her finisher, the Strong Zero. Evan sucks so
Come
bad.
Come on. I like
she
this match.
She is terrible.
She has such
a long way to go. She's got her character down. I was
First
in the Marines.
Of all, you show her some goddamn respect.
Done.
She was a Marine.
Yeah, yeah. She's got her entrance down. She's got her gimmick down as far as her gear and how she looks. She just needs to work on the whole wrestling aspect of her character. What, you know,
the
in-ring work.
One of the best comments I saw about her on Twitter.
Yeah.
It was something along the lines of, she spends an awful lot of time perfecting her hair, knowing that it's just going to come out in two moves.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that this match was way better than the drizzling shitstorm that was her first round match.
Oh yeah,
I don't even remember who she fought in the first round.
It doesn't matter.
I just remember that the entire match was totally off.
Yeah.
I thought that it was a vast improvement. Do I think she's great? No. But I thought she was serviceable. She had that one sequence in the corner where she kept like flipping around the ropes and knocking her down. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, but it took her a really long time to do it.
Well,
and
right.
It was made Tony Storm look stupid because there was no fluidity to her movement.
But,
and it was almost as bad as Dean Ambrose's slingshot fucking clothesline that he does, making his opponent look dumb in the ring as they wait five minutes for him
it's
to
the
lean
same thing
back
as
and
when,
pop up.
When someone stands in the ring looking confused for 20 minutes when Roman Reigns goes before he runs at them and punches them.
Well, that's why Roman Reigns still sucks.
But I'm just saying, even the superstars at the top of the heap still don't have fluidity to half their shit.
Mm-hmm. She sucks. Shayna Baszler submitted Mia Yim with a rear naked choke. So I like this match. But what I didn't like about it was Baszler working the leg the whole match, locking on a couple legs, Samilishin's doing a couple knee bars, but then at the end she gets a rear naked choke for the win. I think the way she worked the leg so much, she should have shown some diversity and gotten a submission with a leg lock instead.
Right.
You don't need to put over a rear naked choke.
Vicious.
She can do that in the next match. Showing that she worked the leg the whole match, weakened it, and then got a submission off working the leg, to me that looks better, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's one thing I would hope for her character.
Yep.
As she moves forward, is that she will kind of expand on that.
Yep.
Like, she's a legit fighter.
Yeah, no, she is.
It's like Lesnar, that I wish he would show more diversity in his finishes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I would think the way that Baszler has trained and fought for years, like Ken Shamrock, they can just pull submission stuff out of nowhere. You know?
Yep.
That I hope that, like you said, if she's going to focus on the leg, do some crazy shit on the leg.
So,
you know, if she's going to work over an arm, do something on an arm. Don't work over an ankle
right
for 20 minutes, leading me to believe, oh, she's going to put the ankle lock
and,
on it.
And
it's going to be unbelievable.
Choke. Yes.
And then do a wrist lock.
Yeah. That's my complaint on it. She worked the leg the whole match. I thought that was great the way they did that. And then she still used the rear naked choke for the win.
Right. And I'm thinking, because that's sort of her finisher, right?
It is.
That they're just trying to get over her finisher.
And I get it, but still, show her that her MMA skills have diversity and that she's a threat at any part of the body, not just the rear naked choke.
Right.
She did two things, though, in this match that weren't even in the match that I really liked a lot. Number one, on her entrance, she completely ignored the four horsemen of the WWE, four horsewomen of the WWE, when she stood there on the steps and did all her gimmick. And then when she left the ring after she went and saw her girls, she started up the ramp and she just stopped. And I love the fact that all she did was just turned her head and the crowd popped. You know what I mean? Like, she just acknowledged that they were there and the crowd popped. I thought that was great, personally.
Yeah, and you know what? You know how we were talking about how, Asuka gave up the belt and like we didn't see any women competitors that could take her.
Yeah.
So it's better that she,
right.
relinquish it than lose to someone not as good.
Yep.
I would love to see her and Baszler fight.
There was a couple of girls in this turnbuckle, her and Baszler, or
that, I
her
mean,
and the, Tony
how
Storm,
hard,
or her
how
and...
hard Asuka hits.
Oh, yeah.
And how hard Baszler hit. That would be... That would be a fantastic match, I think.
Dude, the world is screaming for Kairi Sane against Asuka.
Well, that
come
would be
on.
Also.
One of them would die, probably. Like, or get permanent or physically...
Jumping off a roof through light tubes onto the back of a truck.
Perfectly. Well, okay, that was Joey Janela, incidentally. And I'm going to see him up here September 22nd, Limitless Wrestling in Westbrook, Maine. He's wrestling JT Dunn, which... They have a cage match and a dog collar chain match on YouTube. You should check out if you haven't seen them.
I hope that you have your life insurance policy paid up, because something tells me the crowd is not going to be safe in that match.
Probably not. Anyhow, so Dakota Kai pinned Rhea Ripley with a sick double foot stomp.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit.
Now, me too. It surprised me a lot. The electric chair face drop thing onto the apron, I thought was impressive as all hell.
Yep.
On the outside of the ring, I thought it looked great. I actually really enjoyed this match. I thought Ripley looked a lot better.
Yep.
And we got to really see Kai's ability in it. And that setup they did towards the finish, it actually made sense. Like, who was the dumbass diva that was doing the move where she required her opponent to sit up or hold themselves up so she could jump on them? Was it Naomi that was doing that at the corner? I'm trying to think.
Was it Naomi? For some reason,
I think
I want to say Sasha Banks was the one that would have them.
Well, no, Sasha Banks lays them crossways across the ropes and then drops the knees on them. There was one of them that was using a finisher where they would like do the tree of woe, but like their opponent had to hold themselves up, and as they climbed the top rope to jump down on them. And I'm like, that's just so fucking stupid.
You know what? I remember it happening, and I cannot picture who's doing it.
I, for some reason, I think it's Naomi, but I don't know. But anyways, I was getting so frustrated because it didn't make sense. The setup didn't make sense. It was done poorly. However, the way Rhea Ripley and Dakota Kai did it, it made perfect sense. They're both on the top rope. They're jockeying for position. Kai hits her and knocks her down, so she falls down and kind of catches herself in the tree of woe. And then as Ripley's trying to pull herself up to unlock herself, Kai jumps up and hits the double foot stomp. So it made perfect sense. It was a great finish. And, you know, Dakota Kai has that almost like that cute girl next door, you know, good looks or whatever, if you will. You know what I mean? She looks kind of young and innocent or something. And yet she gets in the ring and she, like, kicks your face in.
Yeah.
So your guard's down and you don't expect her to be as aggressive as she is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was actually, after the first round, I was like, all right, like, I get some of the hype around her.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the first round was just kind of whatever.
She took a beating.
Oh, no, actually,
and then,
she was against Tessa Blanchard, right?
Huh?
She fought Tessa Blanchard?
No, Kairi Sane.
Oh, Kairi Sane.
She fought Great Khali's student, Dakota Kai.
Oh, right.
And took an ass whooping the entire match, and then all of a sudden hit that, like, around the world kick in the face and then double foot stomp, and it was like, all right, cool.
Right. But I was actually, for some reason, I was expecting Ripley to go over.
Me too.
Because they, like, really seemed
to
be going behind
her. They were talking about her. Yes. Yep.
But I was very impressed. I wasn't that impressed with Ripley in the first round.
Yep.
But I thought this match, you know, for both of them, I thought this match was fantastic.
Yep.
And again, like, I'm curious. These are more people that I'm like, you know what? I see something that I'm going to really enjoy in them.
Yep.
In, you know, 2 years.
A lot of these girls, though, I mean, just the exposure of being in this tournament does them well if they don't sign with WWE and they stay on the indies or, like, you know, like, say, Toni Storm, who's most likely going to be in progress for a while longer, keep going to Stardom and this and that. I mean, the exposure just is tremendous for them and helps them out. But then you have other girls like maybe Rhea Ripley, who's going to be staying and signed with the Performance Center, like you said. Oh, geez, in a couple of years, I can't wait to see what she can do then, so...
Yeah.
In the final match of the second round, Candice LeRae defeated Nicole Savoy with Miss LeRae's Wild Ride. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Savoy.
Yep.
I thought this match was okay. I love Candice LeRae. I have a tremendous issue with her finisher. And that stems from the fact that it's ludicrous. A good finisher is something you can hit out of nowhere, or you can do or hit on someone. It's not where you have to somehow set yourself up where you're both standing on the second rope in a particular position so you can do a swinging neck breaker. You know what I mean? It's not like you set them up on the top rope in the corner and then do a superplex or some sort of suplex or whatever, you know, off the top rope, and you've set them there. Like, that setup position makes sense. This setup position, it doesn't make any sense because it doesn't feel natural. You know, like, she should just stick to, like, using that move as a spot as opposed to as a finisher, in my opinion.
I could see that.
Let's see here. Jumping right into the quarterfinals. 25-minute time limit, which I didn't hear any time limit announced for the second round.
Right. I don't remember hearing anything.
Yeah. In the opening match, Mercedes Martinez pinned Abby Lathe with her Fishman's Buster. Yep. I was shocked that Martinez won. I mean, legit, absolutely shocked. I thought for sure that Lathe was going to win because they kept talking about how she was like a modern-day protege of Mae Young and used her finisher and this and that.
Right.
And not that Mercedes Martinez doesn't deserve to win by any means. I thought for sure that Abby Lathe was going to get the win on that one.
Yeah, man, I can't call her Abby Lathe. I don't know why.
I know. It's Kimberly. And yeah. I have, yeah. Yeah.
But I enjoyed this match, but this was my least favorite of the four quarterfinal matches.
Yep, me too. Me too.
You know, I mean, I didn't really it's going into it, they did say that she was kind of a protege of Mae Young and all that stuff. But I think that was more to get over that they named it after Mae Young.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the match. I thought it was really good. I thought both of them were good. And, you know, I mean, I had no problem with the finish. I have no problem, you know, with anything.
Nah, me neither. Shayna Baszler defeated Candice LeRae, submitted her. So, first of all, the spot where Candice dove through the ropes and caught Baszler on the head and did that diving, spinning DDT onto the floor.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought it looked like it was completely, totally friggin' botched. And I was jumped me a little bit. I was like, oh no, like someone's gonna get hurt. So
unlike what happened in with Kairi Sane later on.
Yeah, exactly. I also, one of my favorite parts of the match was when Lita was rambling on and on trying to get some point, but she was like lost in her own words. And Candice locked in the, you know, Gargano escape, and all of a sudden Jim Ross just, you know, completely cuts her off, but makes an awesome call in the process of what's going on in the ring. I loved it.
I didn't remember that.
Oh God, yeah. Lita was just ramming. I was sitting going, oh my God, shut up. And then I see, you know, Candice lock in, you know, Johnny's finish, and I'm like, there you go. And Lita's rambling, and then all of a sudden Jim Ross just cuts her off and does an unbelievable call of, you know, it was great. It was actually really, really good. So also, I thought when Baszler wasn't letting go of the finish at first and kept the hold on and everything, I thought for sure that the referee was gonna reverse the decision.
Yep.
But that didn't happen.
Yeah, I had a problem with the finish of the match.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah.
Which was
basically what you just said. I thought one, when she put the hold on, she was under the ropes.
I see. I thought she was initially as well, but then when they showed another angle, she was clear.
Well, Baszler was right by the ropes too.
Yes.
Which is, you know, but, and then like you said, I thought she's not breaking the hold. She's not breaking the hold. I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, because they're. But I wasn't expecting Candice LeRae to win the tournament.
Me neither.
Shayna Baszler, I could legit see winning the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, she's building herself up as being nasty, you know, and she's just going to brutalize everybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could have, the angle that they're building, you could have done, that same thing by having her get, you know, she wins the match, but then getting the, you know, vacating the result.
Yeah, reversing the decision, and then she gets, and then they can, you got to learn to control yourself or whatever, you know.
Exactly. Like, I'm thinking when that's going on, you could have Charlotte or Bailey or someone, well, not Bailey because she's hurt, but, you know, or Becky Lynch. Have one of them jump in and make the save.
Oh, yeah.
You go as a confrontation, and now you can build up to something at Survivor Series or whatever.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. Next up, we got Toni Storm against...
I mean, honestly, I could see that happening in the finals, too.
Yeah. You know,
them being at SmackDown. I mean, Becky and Charlotte are there.
Toni Storm wrestled Piper Nevin. And
this match was amazing.
This match was, well, as soon as they announced, like, as soon as they announced, you know, in the previous episode that this was going to be a quarterfinal match, quarterfinal match, I was like, yay!
Yeah.
Like, I knew this was going to rock because they've wrestled each other before multiple times.
Oh, and, have they?
Oh, yeah, they've wrestled each other before.
To be honest, I don't really follow a lot of where they were from.
Yes.
So.
But, yeah, they have. They've wrestled before, and... I didn't want to hype it up too much because it's one of those things like, maybe they're going to give him 5 minutes. Maybe they're not going to let him really, like, show us what they can do in the ring. And nope, they absolutely let them show us what they could do in the ring.
Yeah, I love this match.
I mean, this was a great match. It was a long match, I thought. And, you know, the spot in the middle with the test of strength and then the pin attempts.
Oh, my God, I loved it.
That is 100% like an old school World of Sport, you know, British, European wrestle type gimmick. It was awesome.
When Ronnie was complaining about how he was not impressed by this tournament at all, that was one of the spots that I brought up to him.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, they're doing the test of strength. They're on the mats. They're both doing the bridge, like the neck bridges.
Yeah.
And they're both, you know, then they have the bridge and they see, oh, hey, you know what? We're evenly matched. This is good sport. And they do the shake when they're upside down.
Yeah.
I was like, Ronnie, come on. This is like, remember when we used to watch wrestling as kids? Like, that is that shit right there.
Exactly. You know, it was so good. No, you're absolutely right. Did you, the spot where Toni Storm's doing the bridge and Piper does a thing where she pops up and lands on her to try and crush her back down.
Yep.
And she starts to sag, and then she forces herself back up, and she bridges up on that. That was pretty friggin' impressive.
Oh, good.
That was just her, you know, her holding her up like that. Yeah, that was impressive. Impressive. Yeah,
like, that whole sequence reminded me. I mean, I can't think of a specific instance, but it seems like something probably involving Shawn Michaels, where, you know, he and another babyface type are going back and forth. And they're doing a move, and they both do the kip up at the same time.
Yep.
And they both stand and look at each other, and then, you know, they do something else, and then they both do the same thing. It's so good. Loved it.
No, this match was fantastic. I mean, they went back and forth. And, you know, and I'm not all surprised that it was as great as it was. And then the finish with the top rope leg drop made sense. You know, I mean, it was a great match. Plain and simple, a great hard-hitting match where they both really put their all in there. So I was appreciative of it all.
I was pulling for Piper Niven to win.
Yeah.
But, I mean, either way. But I like both of them a lot. So
I would have been happy with either one of them advancing.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely would have been happy with either one of them advancing. And then in the final match, Kairi Sane defeated Dakota Kai with her big sick elbow. Now, these two have wrestled each other in Stardom before.
Okay.
This was a great match. And I think Kai had a legit injury to her leg, to her knee before the match, because she had a brace on underneath. And a reason why I think it was actually legit is because she was hobbling around, but they didn't talk about it. Like, they weren't talking about it, and she just – I think she just powered through it or whatever. But I thought this was a great match.
Yeah,
I thought all of Sane's matches every round were very, very stiff and brutal.
But that's her.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it was –
I might have to start watching Shimmer.
Shimmer's great. Watch Stardom World on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where most of these. Tony Storm's their heavyweight champion. Their world champion right now.
Oh, is she? All right, yeah, yeah. I'll have to look for that.
Well, last I knew, she was. I mean, but and then we go to the final episode, the semifinals, and we have Shayna Baszler submitted Mercedes Martinez, Rhea Ricochet again. There was some stiff
shots.
Freaking shots.
You can tell when Martinez
gave Baszler at the beginning. Holy.
I was just going to say, you can tell when, you know, they go from selling to like legit shots.
Yeah.
When one of the people, like the person who gets chopped or, you know, forearmed or something, like gets a smile on their face, like, God damn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like you can always tell when when someone at your house is hurt, when they're laughing and not when they're like in tears.
Yeah.
At one point when Baszler just had that smirk on her face after taking one of the shots.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh God, that one stung. That was the one.
I liked when initially with the first opening salvo, she's no selling Martinez's punches and forearms and shit. And then she freaking nailed one of those with the first chop she hit her with. And Baszler's like, oh God. No, they beat the piss out of each other. I thought for sure Martinez was going to get choked out.
Okay.
I didn't think she was going to tap. I thought she was going to, like, you know, refuse the tap out thing and show heart and pass out. And I thought that was going to be the finish. But
I'm glad they didn't do that.
Why?
I don't know. It's, in a way, it goes with how they're trying to build Baszler up as this monster or whatever. I think it makes her look more vicious if she can't take it and taps than if she can withstand it for another 20, 30 seconds and then, you know, pass out.
Right. I get it. And then
sometimes if you see somebody, you don't want to overuse that. And it seems like they've done that a bunch in the last, you know, year.
Yeah.
Where someone's been refusing to submit and they just kind of fade out and pass out. And it sort of loses, you know, it loses it for me.
I think the best that was ever done was Bret Hart and Steve Austin, Russell.
Well, come on. That's like one of the three greatest matches of all time.
And then the final semifinal match, Kairi Sane pinned Toni Storm with her big sick elbow.
God, I loved it.
The friggin' armbar submission that Storm put on
Kairi
Sane was disgusting. I mean, I thought she was going to dislocate her arm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too.
That first second when the arm is like a 90-degree angle and the shoulder, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, I thought she was going to tap. Was going to tap out. Like, that was vicious looking.
Yeah.
Vicious. And then, of course,
I'm assuming she's got some kind of double joint thing, like Alexa Bliss with her elbow.
But when she like we kind of brushed on earlier, when she dove off the top rope to the floor
and smashed
her face on the friggin' ramp, and it was instantly bruised, and it had a little laceration and everything.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And when something like that happens early in a match, it's never a good thing, because, like, you could think, all right, that's going to kind of hinder what she does the rest of the time, because she's got it in her head. Like, one, she's in pain.
Yep.
Like, legitimate. Like, out my face is sort of bleeding pain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, legit pain.
Two, you know, she could get it in her head, like, oh, I missed my timing on that, so her timing could have been off afterwards.
Yep.
Or three, you could have, you know, like the Samoa Joe Finn Balor match, they kept stopping because he was bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, you could have the referees step in and mess it up. So, but man, I'm glad that they didn't do any of those things.
Me too.
Because this match was great.
Yeah, every match that Sane had ever all tournament long. I know I just said this few minutes ago, was a hard hitting, stiff freaking match.
Yeah.
You know, again, they beat the crap out of each other. They had a great match. They told a great story, and then of course, you know, Kairi Sane gets the pin with the big elbow at the end, and
yeah.
Here's an interesting fun fact or whatever. They've both come from Stardom. I don't think, though, and I couldn't find, because I did a lot of research and I couldn't find a match anywhere, I don't think these two have ever faced in the ring before. I think this is the first time they'd ever touched. Though they worked together in Japan for so long, I don't think they ever had a match over there. And one of the things I really liked, the post-match with Storm and Sane and them talking to each other, mm-hmm. and embracing and like basically crying and everything, like it was just emotional. It was awesome. It was awesome. I loved it. And what I loved. Thought, go ahead.
The one thing that I thought was weird though, when Baszler beat Martinez, and they were giving Baszler the roses. And whatever else.
Yeah.
Martinez was still kind of standing in the ring.
Yep.
You know, like Triple H and Stephanie were raising her hand and doing whatever, and Martinez was like right there next to them.
Yeah.
But when Kairi Sane beat Toni Storm, you know, they talked, they embraced, but then Toni Storm skidooed.
Yeah.
And it was just Kairi Sane there. And like I at first I thought, oh, maybe, you know, they're gonna do something for the losers in the semifinals or something, but you know, I think it was kind of one of those no one really knew what to do, so one stayed and one left.
After Martinez hanging out in the ring, they just Toni Storm, you need to leave.
I am very much looking forward to the final.
I am too. I hope the crowd is appreciative and gives it a good reception and, you know, values what it is they're watching as opposed to just going like, ugh.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But. And hopefully there's no, like, ridiculous chance about whatever.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, I honestly, what could make it better is if they put it on SmackDown.
No, see, I don't want to watch it with commercial breaks.
Well, yeah, that's true also.
I don't want that match, and I don't want to interrupt with commercial breaks. I want to see it commercial free. I don't want to deal with that.
But figure if it's if the show starts at 10.
Yeah.
You know, well, Eastern time. If the show starts at 10 live and it goes until 11.
Right.
Match isn't going to start until 10:40.
Yeah.
So by the time SmackDown is over, you know, you have all the letdown that SmackDown, and then you have 40 minutes of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, of, oh, here's a video package you can sit and watch. I mean, I have a bad feeling you're going to see empty pockets in the crowd, and it's going to be, you know, like I'm sure that they'll try and fill it in. But like, I mean, it's a Tuesday, and I know that it's only 7 o'clock there.
Right.
You know, it's not like they're doing it at Madison Square Garden where, hey, okay, it's a school night, it's a work night. You know, I'm not going to stick around until 11:30 and then drive 2 hours home to, you know, whatever. So, I mean, at least it's early enough that the crowd shouldn't really go anywhere. But I'm still there's a lot of factors that could hopefully not happen that ruin what should be an amazing match.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just worried about the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about the crowd. And then, you know, Vince and company having, well, the crowd didn't really react. Well, because they're morons and they weren't appreciating the awesomeness that was in front of them.
Well, also, you know who's going to be on SmackDown Tuesday night?
Who?
Vince McMahon.
Oh, yep, that's right.
So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure he's there anyway behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see what happens.
I liked on NXT or on the Mae Young Classic that, no, even on NXT as well, but when Triple H came out, they didn't play his music, he just came out.
Yeah, because he's not Triple H, he's Triple H.
Right. That makes sense. You know, it makes perfect sense. He's not the wrestler, he's the executive producer. Yeah. Did you watch NXT this week?
I did not.
All right, so on NXT this week... Hold,
before we move off the Mae Young Classic...
Yeah.
I just want to air a gripe about the female ref.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
She does a fine job in the ring.
Yep.
But for me, she gets herself too involved, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I forget who it was. It was one of the matches in the second round. It might have been Toni Storm's match when she came out first. She's doing her whole thing in the ring, her head banging or whatever, and the referee, she's coming over and, hey, go in the corner. Go in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, throughout the match, she's, I don't know what it is. There's something that she always attracts my attention by doing something, and it takes away from my enjoyment of the match, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. I think that maybe she's just overzealous and trying too hard because she's trying to make a good impression.
I think that's what it is, because she's always doing like weird arm flails and like pointing towards the timekeeper's table, like saying stuff that like you didn't have a two count. So why are you like keeping, you know, quote unquote records of the false attempts, you know, but. It just like anytime anything happens in the ring, sure, like her arm flips up, her arm flips to the side, and I'm just like, oh my god, like you're just distracting me from whatever I'm doing.
See, I didn't feel the same.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if she's going to be the ref in the finals. I'm curious.
I'd wager a guess. Yes. NXT this week featured the street fight. No holds barred street fight match between Cassius Ohno and Hideo Itami.
Oh crap! I forgot about that.
Yeah, I won't say anything.
I'll watch NXT after we.
I won't say anything more other than it was a great match.
Excellent.
I enjoyed it, and then of course they closed the show out with Asuka being brought to the ring and surrendering the title, on and on and on, and that was solid. That was decent. That was done well. That was done well. So. And we get to see Zeta on the show as she takes on Sonya Deville, and who I can only describe as Shayna Baszler's lunch when she comes to NXT. They repackage her. Because when you have Shayna Baszler, you don't have another MMA girl gimmick.
So. Yeah.
No, it's, you know what I mean? Like, you don't.
No, it's true. See, that was... You know, when in the Attitude Era, when you had Shamrock there.
Yep.
And then Steve Blackman came in.
Yep.
And then
Dan Severn, to a lesser extent. But Dan Severn legit beat Ken Shamrock in a super fight in the UFC, so.
Right. But you're like, well, we can't have three guys who are these unstoppable fighting guys. So they kind of.
Yeah.
Shamrock was sort of pushed up and the other guys were sort of in the background. You know, until. They were kendo sticking Shane off the
Titantron. Crow, yeah, right. Well, Dan Severn never did that. He got his neck broken and then he cut that great promo of, look what you did to me, Owen. Yeah. Look what you did. I have to wear a neck brace now, Owen. I can't feed my family, Owen. Yeah, that was.
Well, that's why I kicked your leg out of your
why I kicked your leg out of your leg. hell.
My friends has that on VHS. I'm surprised that tape still plays. I mean, I'm sure now it might not, but back then we must have watched that Owen promo 400 million times. Just watch it, rewind, and watch it, and rewind, and it gets funnier and funnier every single time.
No, that is fantastic. It's a classic. It's a classic. Yeah. So
you tasked me.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
With watching. So this
is what I did, okay? I said, let's randomly watch a pay-per-view. So I said, pick a number between 1, 2, and 3. And 1, 2, and 3 were, 1 was WWE,
ECW, and 2
was ECW, 3 was WCW, you picked 3. And then I said, pick a year between 1990 and 1999, and you picked 1990.
Because I was hoping to get some awesome, like, Rockers and Ultimate Warrior stuff.
And then I went and counted the number of pay-per-views that they did in 1990. It was 5. And then I mixed up the order and said, pick number 2, 1, 5. You picked number 3, and you got
Ronnie's
us.
Number 3.
And then you agreed with him.
Well, because I wanted him to be included.
Now, fuck that. He isn't going to record with us, and you're the one picking the show. And you picked us... Capital Combat 90 the return of RoboCop.
Which they must have said 700,000 times in that pay-per-view.
All right, so this pay-per-view as a whole was not good.
Really?
No.
Because I had the complete opposite reaction to it. Oh,
seriously?
Okay. First of all, I watched this shit live when it aired.
I remember watching it as well.
I have not seen it since then.
Yep.
And the amazing thing is, as I'm watching it again, like, I forgot all about it. I knew that it existed. I forgot all about it. But as matches were happening, I was like, oh, my God. Like, I think this happens and then this and this. Yep. And then it was happening. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm having weird flashes. And then I realized, oh, that's right, because I watched this at my cousin's house.
Well, here's my issue with it. The caliber of talent on the show is second to none. I mean, sincerely. I mean,
so many Hall of Famers.
Oh, my God. The Road Warriors, the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express.
The Undertaker.
The Undertaker's on there as Mean Mark. You know, yeah. Bam Bam Bigelow. Cactus Jack. You know, Kevin Sullivan's on there. Johnny Ace. You know what I mean? Like Tommy Wildfire Rich. Mike Rotunda. I mean,
yeah. Hell, so Paul Elling had a match.
So many great names on the show. So many great names on the card.
Yeah.
However, I feel like a lot of matches went almost 20 minutes.
Okay.
On the card. And I don't have an issue with that. Except I feel like a lot of these matches went on longer than they should have.
Okay.
You know,
I took notes on this event.
I took some notes as well. But I really feel like it went on much longer. Some of these matches went on way longer than they should have.
My initial impression of this event happening is the whole thing feels like a fight.
Yep.
You know, they have the national anthem played. You know, they have the flag out with the horns playing the anthem to open the show.
Yep.
You have one commentator, you know, doing interviews with people as they leave the ring. You
Tony
have
Schiavone did a lot of pre-match interviews
and post-match.
He did
people
a couple
out
post-match,
afterwards.
Yep.
But the whole thing, the way everything was set up, the way the ring announcer was, you know, with the mic with the long cord that wrestlers kept whipping out of the way as they got into the ring.
Yeah, Gary Michael Capetta.
Like everything about it, it felt like. You know, like a boxing event feels. Yes. It felt like a fight night.
Yeah.
As opposed to now when you see pay-per-views and it's all about like showmanship.
Yeah.
There was like a 50-foot entryway that was ground level. You came through a curtain right out into the ring. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, a WrestleMania 250-yard ramp that, you know, you're winded by the time you even get out there. You know, like the whole feel of it was just so different from now.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
And it's like, and I miss that so much.
Okay. All right. I get that. However, again, I'm going to go back to me, the matches felt too long. Like every match practically, except the main event, felt like it went on for too long. Well, and the hair versus hair match. We'll get into that in a minute. But like, so you had Gary Michael Capetta doing the ring announcing, and right. To me, he has such a unique voice, and he always reminds me of this time in the NWA and WCW, you know?
Right.
You had Bob Caudle and Jim Ross calling the action, which I love Bob Caudle.
Yeah.
And I love Jim Ross as well, so it's a great duo. And then Tony Schiavone was doing pre- and post-match interviews And then Gordon Solie had a couple of segments where he was out back and with RoboCop. But anyways, so
question for you.
Yeah.
Where was RoboCop returning from?
I don't know.
Like I mean I guess RoboCop 2 probably came out around then.
Well, if you look at one of the posters that I saw, it said you know, look for RoboCop 2 in theaters soon or something like that, like right on the poster. Right. So this was definitely a cross promotion with RoboCop 2. So I guess maybe that's why he was back, but he'd never been in wrestling before. So it's not like he was back in wrestling, yeah. And it was just
another issue I had with the RoboCop garbage towards the end of the night.
Yeah. So the opening match was a six-man tag of the Road Warriors and Norman the Lunatic against Kevin Sullivan, Cactus Jack, and Bam Bam Bigelow with the big kahuna, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, which the good guys won in just about 10 minutes. So my big issue with this was...
How terrible Kevin Sullivan took the clothesline off the top rope to lose the match?
How
he was, like, turned sideways and falling before Hawk even jumped?
Yep, pretty much. So I remember Bigelow being in the Jim Crockett Promotions WCW in his short run from 1988 for a short time. I do not remember him being in the promotion in 1990, and so I looked it up, and he wrestled three matches in 1990. One on a Clash, one on a pay-per-view, one on a house show. So at least my memory's not that bad. But, you know, I don't know. This match didn't do a whole lot for me. It just felt like it kind of, you know, like you had... Cactus got his ass whooped for a little while. It took quite the beating, getting tossed over the guardrail. The wooden stairs being thrown on him, that looked like looked like it hurt, because there's no give to those. At least the metal ones they use now, like, they flex a little, but man.
Yeah, because they're
aluminum. Yeah. But still, like, yeah. What are your thoughts on that match?
That match was all right.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I thought was I don't know, craziest, but when Cactus was thrown into the crowd.
Yep, that's when I meant. And
I mean, the crowd is like literally sitting right there, and I'm pretty sure he kicked a guy in the head.
Yep.
You know, and it's like you never see that anymore.
No.
You know, like back in the day when, you know, all the wrestling was just that little metal gate going around the ring.
Yep.
I mean, the crowd was right there. Nowadays, it's like if someone's going into the crowd, there's huge, you know, pockets of empty space.
Oh, there's insecurity and, runs over.
Yeah.
Keeps the fans back, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, they're doing stuff in the crowd, and there's a guy still sitting in his seat until someone, like, taps his shoulder and says, move over this way. He's like, oh, okay. I mean, come on. This is great.
Second match, Mean Mark with Teddy Long defeated Johnny Ace in 10 minutes and 41 seconds. I thought this match was at least 5 minutes too long.
Well, a couple things with this match. One, I really liked how the previous match, the losers from the match, were walking out as...
Oh, yeah, they were like, still trying to get out to the back. That was good.
You know, in the curtain. Again, feels like a fight. Like, these guys just got beaten. They're stumbling out of the ring. And then, oh, yeah, well, we have 10 more fights for you.
That was the other thing. I noticed, like, the pace of everything except the matches was very quick. You know, the pre-match interviews, post-match interviews, the going from one segment to the other. Like you said, like, they're starting the next match before the losers have even cleared the ring.
It felt, you know, it felt so much like it was a relief in a way, because there wasn't, oh, hey, this match ended. Now I'm going to look at somebody standing watching a TV screen in backstage for two minutes until here's somebody walking down a hallway. And now, you know, like it was bam, 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 bam. And I mean, the event was still like just under 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
So it's not like this was an hour and 45 minutes long.
Right.
You know, it's basically the same time. But I also what I really liked about the Johnny Ace Undertaker match was you got to see the Undertaker before he was the Undertaker doing the Undertaker's moves.
Yeah. Yep.
He did, you know, he walked the rope.
That was impressive too. Clothesline
stuff.
Yeah.
He did, you know, like a whole bunch of stuff. Yep. And when he walked the rope, he wasn't holding the guy.
No, he walked the rope, like walked halfway down the ring rope before he dropped that elbow. Off. The finish was impressive. That was an impressive elbow drop. Absolutely. Isn't it weird seeing him without any tattoos as well?
You know what? I loved it because it reminds me when he first came in and he would have the rubber gloves on.
Yeah.
And like he would take all this stuff and just beat people and leave. You know,
and I like how the finish of this move, it registered an unbelievable 8.2 on the slam-o-meter.
Yep.
Which was the only time we saw the slam-o-meter all night.
Well, they talked about it.
Yes. Yeah.
They talked about it a lot in the first match because there was a bunch of big guys, Norman and Bam Bam. They're like, oh, that'll be – this could register high on the Slam-O-Meter.
But the only time we saw it was like after Mean Mark was like, all right, stop talking about the Slam-O-Meter.
Yeah.
Gordon solely lowered himself to do a backstage segment with looking for RoboCop, talking about Sting and all his little stingers. I mean, it was –
Yeah, that was not great.
And then Tony Schiavone talked to the Rock and Roll Express about their upcoming Corporal Punishment strap match, which I then got excited for. Because honestly, I remembered this event, but I didn't remember this event. So I'm like, oh, a strap match. Awesome. You know? But more on that later. Then we got the Samoan SWAT team, Fatu and the Samoan Savage, who defeated Tommy Wildfire Rich and Captain Mike Rotunda in 17 minutes and 54 seconds. You cannot tell me this match was not too long.
All right, maybe.
Yeah. As a kid, and even now, I just love the name the SST. I don't know why. I just think it's awesome. When I was younger and I found out that it actually stood for something, I was a little bit disappointed that their name was actually the Samoan SWAT team. That made less sense to me than SST. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
The one thing I really liked about this match was the story they were telling with the referee distracted and they would make the tag, but then the referee didn't see it, so he'd force it back.
Yeah, old school, yep.
Right, and they did it very well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, I'm watching it now, and I know, obviously, in 1990, I didn't know that it was all scripted and whatever else. I know it now, but you're still watching it, and I swear to God, I'm watching it. I'm like, God damn it, he made that tag. You know, like when my son was watching Lucha Underground, and instead of giving the $100,000 briefcase, the guys came in and beat him up, and they took the briefcase.
Yep.
My son was legit angry. He's like, he is supposed to get that money. Why didn't he get that money?
His money. He earned it.
I don't know. Those other guys came in and they beat him up and took it. He's like, that's not right. I'm like, it's not right at all. And you know, that's an 8-year-old's brain watching wrestling.
No, you're absolutely right. But they did the thing that drives me nuts. Rotunda takes a beating for a good 10 minutes, I swear. And then tags in Tommy Rich, and then 2 minutes later, he gets pinned.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, it just kind of bothered me. That's all. It just kind of bothered me that the finish went that way, but whatever. Tony Schiavone spoke to the Steiner brothers about their upcoming match with Doom later in the evening.
Oh, my God. Was this the worst promo?
It was bad.
I forgot how bad Rick Steiner was on the mic.
Oh, to me, the standout was Scott Steiner, which was like...
Was it when he was saying, when my brother and I were growing up, we went through a lot of things together.
Yeah, not just that, but and I didn't write it down and I should have, but the moment that stood out for me was when he said, like... He was talking about Doom. It's like, you know, Doom, you're looking for a match tonight, but we're not here to wrestle you. But he didn't like dive home. He didn't like drive home. We're here to fight, or we're gonna kick your. He's like, we're not here to wrestle you. And when we see you in the ring later tonight, we're gonna beat you, right, Rick? And I'm like, I think you forgot to talk about we're not here to wrestle. We're here to fight, or something like that. You know what I mean? Right. But never delivered that part of the message.
Yeah.
So,
I got more on Scott Steiner later.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Go ahead. The match.
When we get to their match. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. Next up,
hair
versus hair matches. Precious Paul Ellering and Sugar Ray dance around whatever Theodore Long.
Number one, Teddy Long couldn't dance back then either.
Nope, still can't.
Number two, he's got boxing gloves on. Why
and
is
headgear.
He slapping?
Yeah, why is he slapping him?
I'm like, what is going? Why are you wearing boxing gloves and headgear? You're gonna slap a guy?
Yep.
Like, come on.
So Teddy Long lost in a minute 57 seconds. Missy Hyatt was the special guest ring announcer, but she only did the intro, not the out. She didn't announce the winner. She just introduced them. So it seems like she, you know, only did half her job.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I remember Missy Hyatt being way hotter than she was.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I thought it was weird that Paul Ellering was already in the ring. He didn't even get an introduction. He got like the jobber start out of already being there when we came back from the interview. And then Teddy Long gets the full introduction with the really dumb music.
Yep.
And I like how Long tries to cheat with the loaded boxing glove, but then Ellering pulls it off, and he can't get his hand in the glove, so he just
smacks him in the
just
face.
Just hits him like it's a baseball bat, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the stylist dives in the ring, cuts off a few clumps of hair, and is like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, like they didn't even finish the job, because later on he came out to manage.
Yeah, and he had like...
And he still had most of his hair.
And here's the thing, it's a hair versus hair match where one guy's starting to bald, the other guy's completely bald on the top of his head, he just has that crown around his, you know, the around three sides above the ears, and it's a little long in the back, but he gets that trimmed up and that's it. And then later on, like, he comes out with a don't rag on.
Yeah.
And one of the good guys rips it off, and the fans start making fun of him. Like, what are they making fun of him for? Like, it's just shorter. It doesn't look bad.
That's the thing. It was just a trim.
Yeah, it just got a trim.
You know, like, it wasn't like the stylist, like, really, like, gave him a couple total bald streaks.
Yep.
You know, when he had to be embarrassed about what he looked like until he evened it out or whatever. Like, I didn't get it.
All right.
One thing I will say after this match.
Yeah.
God damn, did the Horseman cut a great promo.
I was about to say, next up, Tony Schiavone spoke with the Horseman, and here's what I have a problem with.
Sid Vicious being in the Horseman?
Not only that, but you have Arn Anderson and Sid Vicious and Barry Windham on the show. Why aren't they wrestling?
Yeah.
Why is Arn Anderson and Barry Windham and not in a match of some kind?
Well, yeah, and same thing, Sting wasn't in a match?
Well, Sting was still recovering from his knee injuries. That makes sense.
Right.
But anyways, so next up we get the Midnight Express, Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan Lane with James E. Cornette battling the United States Tag Team Champions, the Z-Man and Flying Brian. And this match goes just over 20 minutes before the Midnights get the win. They probably could have cut 5 minutes out of this match and quickened the pace a little bit and made it a little bit more entertaining.
Two things.
Well, real quick.
I missed the hell out of the United States Championship.
Oh, me too.
The tag belts.
U.S. tag titles. Oh, me too. Absolutely. Jim Cornette was put in a cage, but instead of it being raised up like normal,
it was just in the...
Just pushed down the aisle.
Yep.
Don't worry, that cage comes into play later.
Yep. The four of those guys in that match...
Yep.
...are so good.
No, I thought it was a great match. I really enjoyed the match. I just... It felt like a night of a lot of really long matches that the matches just kind of dragged. So,
yeah, it really made me miss Brian Pillman.
You know, it really made me – the one thing about the match that annoyed me was the fact they dubbed over the Midnight Express's iconic entrance music with some really bad generic music.
That explains it.
Yep.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't put two and two together.
Oh, yeah.
But as I'm watching, I'm like, I don't remember this music.
Nah, the Midnight Express's entrance music is literally, like, just iconic. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Right.
You know, and they just plug some generic crap over it. Oh, yeah, it was dumb. That, and I was a little pissed off that Bobby Eaton hits that spectacular Alabama jam off the top rope onto Brian Pillman, and Z-Man doesn't even try to dive in and break it up. They just leave Pillman to kick out of it. Like, that annoyed me. That was a great leg drop. I mean, you gotta admit, that looked impressive as hell.
Yeah, man, he's easily one of my favorites.
Oh, Bob Eaton is such an underrated competitor in the ring. I mean, he's definitely a tag team specialist, but even as a singles, I mean, like,
Oh, my goodness. Everything he did. It's like Bret Hart.
Yep. Yeah.
Everything he did had a reason, and it was done perfectly.
Yep. Yeah. Now, Bob Eaton's one of the best. Absolutely. Absolutely one of the best in the world. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So, it was a great match. Midnight's picked up the win when Stan Lane loaded up the boot and kicked the Z-Man in his shoulder, and he fell right into the small package of Bobby Eaton, who got the three count, and we got ourselves some new United States Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
All right, this is where it gets... So we go to terrible. Gordon Soley in the back, where RoboCop is ready to come to the ring, and for some reason, the Cop of the Future has a security force with him.
Yeah.
As they come out of the room with the smoke, and here he comes, and now we're going to have some
technical difficulties.
Some technical difficulties, you know, and then Sting comes out, and then the Horsemen come out and jump Sting and throw him in the cage that Cornette was just in, and then RoboCop chases them off.
Pulls that door right off that steel cage. Okay.
So first of all, he grabs some of the middle bars and he starts bending them, you know, and then the cage wasn't even locked or latched, so the door pops open. So he has to turn and shove it closed so then he can rip it off its hinges and make it look more impressive. And then Sting and RoboCop chase the bad guys away, but RoboCop's, you know, the leg plate on his left leg has come unattached. And it's just flopping around now. And he tries to hold it in place, and then he just eventually just says, fuck it, and walks to the back with his leg friggin' thing popping open.
So, what I want to know.
Yeah.
Was this Peter Weller as RoboCop?
I don't know. I tried looking that up last night. I tried to find that, and I couldn't find that anywhere. But he never says anything. Sting doesn't even fucking say anything. He comes out there to say something, doesn't say anything. They just go to the back, and we cut to Tony Schiavone interviewing the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
Where Cornette comes out and says, this is supposed to be the time allotted for the new United States Tag Team Champions. And he makes fun of the Junkyard Dog, and Junkyard Dog says he just came from, raids off some address. And Cornette's like, that's my mama's house. So... I'm curious if was that a legit address he threw out there? Like, you know, was that actually Cornette's address? But, And then we jump into the Corporal Punishment match featuring the Rock and Roll Express of Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, battling the Fabulous Freebirds of Michael P.S. Hayes and gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, which the Rock and Rolls pick up the win in 18 minutes and 55 seconds, because, you know, that was long. And
God, I love these two teams, man.
I love these two teams
all day long. I don't care what you said.
I'll never watch this match again.
I love the Rock and Roll Express when, you know, Ricky Morton had I want to say maybe it was Ronnie Garvin in like a chin lock or something in the ring, and the referee gets distracted by Michael Hayes.
Yeah.
And
they switched out guys.
And Ricky Morton just clap and go into the corner. I love that. I used to love that.
They
so
did
much
it twice.
When I was a kid.
And then the ref turns around and he's like, hey, and we tagged. Check with the fans. Oh, okay. And the fans like, yeah, they did, because we love the Rock and Rolls.
Oh, so great.
I like that the Express came out on that motorized platform with a jukebox on it.
Yeah.
That was a cool entrance, you know, the Rock and Roll Express. No. All right, so this strap match, though, was really fucking stupid. Like, they each had a strap, but they weren't attached to it. They just kind of hung it on the ring post.
Yeah, like, I thought...
And then had, like, a standard tag match, and then for some reason...
They could
reason,
just take the straps and whip people with it.
Yeah,
For some reason, I thought that they were going to be attached.
Yeah, me too. Like a strap match. Exactly. Or at least they each were holding the strap the whole time. No, they're having a standard tag match, and then Hayes grabs the strap, so Gibson grabs the other strap, and then somehow Morton gets a hold of Hayes' strap, and then now Garvin's in the ring, and now the bad guys are getting beat up, and they dive out of the ring to like kind of slow things down, and apparently that's the cue to, well, let's put the straps back where they belong, and then let's go back to having a standard tag match. They did that like two or three times in the match.
Yeah.
It was that annoyed the piss out of me. Like that, no, that kind of ruined the match for me almost. But of course, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, so Hayes has Gibson set up for a DDT.
Right.
So, and he's already DDT'd him once and then picked him up to do it again. So as far – and I believe Gibson's the legal man in the ring. So Morton climbs off the top rope and dives off and hits a sunset flip onto Hayes, gets a three count, winning the match for them. He wasn't the legal man.
I don't remember.
And then they kind of barely used the straps, and they hyped about how this was a corporal punishment match, and you got to give these guys all the credit in the world that they're out there with those straps and how bad they hurt and blah blah blah. And I'm like, yeah, but they didn't leave them, they didn't use them. So
yeah,
I don't know. Next up, Tony Schiavone interviewed Doug Furness, who all he did was talk about Lex Luger and not
you
even
know
himself.
What? I made a note about this.
Yeah.
Because WCW loves World's Strongest Men.
Yes, and this is the World's Strongest Man, Doug Furness.
Because, like, a year later, the World's Strongest Man, Bill Kazmaier, was wrestling in matches and, like, trying to break Guinness Book of World Record weightlifting stuff in their events.
Yep, I remember that. And he also did, like, the rolling of the frying pan gimmicks and a couple others.
Yeah, he did. Oh, he lived with his pinky.
Yep.
He lifted some amount of weights attached to a chain that set a world record. And I'm like, but he's using his arm. It's not like you're just using his pinky.
No, no, that was his pinky. Just like Dino Bravo pressed that by himself. Jesse Ventura did not help him on that bench press, 700-pound bench press. Dino Bravo did it himself. That's why he was Canada's strongest man.
Yeah, you don't see Jesse Ventura's arm muscles bulging
as he's lifting this. Don't. No. That's a figment of your imagination, sir. So after Furness leaves, Sting comes out, and he talks about Luger some more, because the storyline talking about all night long is how Lex Luger was hospitalized with his knee injury, and he just got out of the hospital, and against doctor's orders, he's stepping into the ring, and he shouldn't even be there, and... Yeah.
He shouldn't be there because he's a terrible wrestler.
Exactly. So anyhow, Doom, Ron Simmons, and Hacksaw Butch Reed with Teddy Long battling the World Tag Team Champions, the Steiner Brothers, Rick and Scott, and in 19 minutes and 14 seconds, Doom wins the championship.
See, why didn't Doom come out in their masks?
They had lost their masks previously.
Did they? Okay, I don't remember that.
They lost their masks in the match. Yeah. They had
but I was like, wait a minute, how come they're not coming out in the masks?
Yep.
One thing I will say about this match. Before Scott Steiner became Big Papa Pump and got way too big and couldn't do anything anymore, he is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
No, he was great in the ring. Absolutely. He'd thrown his like suplexes, the match, everything and, he did. Yeah, he was crisp.
And the thing I remembered the most, as I'm watching this match, I remember as I'm a kid, you watch the Steiner brothers, and they would always talk about how Rick Steiner was, you know, he was the muscle.
Yep.
You know, he was the powerhouse in the group. But, like, looking at the two of them, Scott Steiner was, like, twice his size.
Yeah, but he was the high flyer with that Frankensteiner.
God, did he flip around that ring.
Yep.
He was so good.
He was. He absolutely was, and then he became not as good.
Yeah, I mean, when – yeah, he lifted himself out of out of wrestling.
So this is the my major problem with the match is the finish. You know, the match, I thought leading up to that, they did a great job with each other, and it was entertaining. But then the finish comes when – I think it's Reed has Rick in the corner, and they're going to do like a second rope belly-to-belly suplex. You know? That's what he looks to be setting up for. And Simmons runs over and grabs Rick by the back of the hair and just pulls him backwards into the ring as Reed does a like, kind of like a sit-down splash on him, and then they get the three count. Like, I mean, we just watched these guys body slamming each other on the floor and really just beating the tar out of each other for, like, you know, pretty damn near 20 minutes.
Well, he took a head bump.
And the finish comes when – no, he didn't even take a head bump. The finish comes when he gets – when Rick gets his hair pulled and he falls from the second rope onto his back and the guy's on top of him and falls on top of him. And
I had a problem with this match.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Scott Steiner fucking launches the referee out of the ring.
Holy shit, didn't he?
And like, no warning, no disqualification, no anything. And that was like the third or fourth time during this pay-per-view that somebody pushed a referee away from them.
It
was like every other match. You know, the ref is trying to break something up and he'd shove him to the side and do something, but my goodness, did that ref take a bump.
Oh gosh, the main event when the ref gets tossed out of the ring.
Out of the ring.
Holy shit. Yeah. That wasn't like what is... that was over the top rope.
Yeah, over the
double
top rope
cartwheel to the floor. Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty sick.
Come on. Like nowadays, if you point at a referee, they like threaten to kick you out.
Pretty much.
But yeah, so the main event.
Tony Schiavone interviewed Doom after the new tag team champions. And then the main event, we got a steel cage match for United States heavyweight champion, the total package Lex Luger, defeated the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, with women in his corner, and 17 and a half minutes by disqualification. Yep, cage match ended in disqualification.
Yeah, he pushed the ref.
Nope. So the story, like I said, they keep selling is that Luger shouldn't be competing, but he is anyways. This is not your typical cage where it's up against the ropes. It's on the floor.
This was like the Hell in the Cell
style. The ring. Yeah, it's kind of like the Hell in the Cell cage. However, it has bars similar to the old blue steel cage from the WWF.
Yep. But if you notice, the top of the cage, instead of just going straight up, they had angled platforms coming in so that you couldn't climb out of it.
Yep.
Which was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't understand why woman was inside the cage with them.
Yes, okay, I made that same note. Like, I know they did the angle where the referee searched her gloves and searched, you know what I mean, and they found a foreign object hidden in her glove. I totally understand that. I didn't understand why woman was inside the cage. Yeah. I just didn't get that. It didn't make any sense to me. So essentially they're out there and they're wrestling and they're having a good match. You know, it's a great Ric Flair match
as Ric Flair could ever get out of Lex Luger.
Exactly. You know, Ric Flair's busted open. He's bleeding. You know, he's taking a beating. Lex is no selling stuff and flexing and
what the fuck?
Oh yeah. Fuck that.
He's getting his ass kicked. And then Ric Flair suplexed him or something.
Yep.
And he just stands right back up. And I'm like, you're selling every other move.
Yeah, no.
This one's the one that you're like, nope.
Yep, pretty much. So the horsemen come out, and it's Arn, Ole, and Sid. And they try to get in the cage, but they can't because it's down. Because
they only climb two rungs up.
Well, Sting comes running out, and, you know... And he tries to stop them, but he doesn't fare too well. So then the Elegante comes out to aid Sting in chasing the horsemen off. And they do for a little while. But then
my note about this match is love the big cage, hate El Gigante.
Yep. Ole somehow gets his hand on the controls, raises the cage up. Barry Windham slides in. Knees Lex Luger in the back, and the referee calls for the bell because, you know, in a no-holds-barred steel cage match, when someone else interferes, it's definitely over then.
There's no way for them to get into the ring, though. Come on, they kept saying that.
Oh, yeah. And then this is the best part for me. When they finally raise it back up and Sting runs in and the horsemen slide out and slide to the floor and they stand up and there's Elegante standing there and does nothing. Does absolutely nothing. Like, even after they've raised the cage up at one point, Ric Flair's kind of walking around. And, like, from the angle of the camera, I'm like, oh, geez, it really looks like he's standing right there. Oh, no, he is. Never mind. He's actually just standing around. The bad guys are walking all around him. He's doing nothing about it.
Yep.
Yeah. That was great.
The thing I didn't understand about the end.
Yep.
Where was RoboCop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, he was... too busy.
Like, why wasn't RoboCop involved in, like, punching one of the horsemen and having them, like, pretend to go flying 30 feet?
Yep. You know? I don't know, dude.
Why is he literally, he's there in a back room. He walks out, your cameras go, and then he comes out and fake rips off a door for a fake cage.
Yep.
That's the return of RoboCop? Like, the entire pay-per-view, every 10 seconds, you're like... oh, we're watching whatever it's called, Capital Combat or whatever.
Yeah.
Capital Combat, the return of RoboCop.
Oh, I know.
It's like, but RoboCop was on screen for less than 30 seconds.
Hey, man, he ripped off a cage door and he chased the horseman away.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was.
Terrible.
He
chased the horseman away. Why didn't he fight the horseman? Come on.
Post-match... Schiavone interviews Ric Flair down the aisle. Ric Flair's losing his fucking mind in this. I mean, there's just some classic Ric Flair, unintelligible rambling that he finishes out with a big woo that everyone woos along with him. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, he's just by the end of it, I heard something about, you know, he's going to keep this belt forever. But for the most part, he was just rambling. And it was pretty fantastic. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very unintelligible promo, but it was phenomenal at the same time.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, this is what separates, you know, like, the all-time greats from some of the people, like, nowadays that are at the top.
Yep.
It's – there's absolutely no point of comparison when Ric Flair can literally get up there and babble incoherently – for 2 minutes
and cut a better
and get more over than anything else.
Yep. No, absolutely. I agree.
You know,
and I mean, then,
that's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of people remember, you know, Ric Flair from his WWE run.
Yep.
I'm not even going to acknowledge his TNA run, but you know, like his, at the end where, you know, he was pushing 50.
Yep.
And not as in shape as he was or whatever else in those matches. And some of the matches were still fantastic.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, there is nothing like watching late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, no.
Ric Flair.
No, I mean, absolutely nothing better.
Good God.
Yep. Absolutely. I
mean,
nothing better.
His promos are amazing. His matches are amazing. I mean, there was one moment in the match I didn't like where Lex Luger like clotheslined him or chopped him or did something, and there was like a delayed reaction and he fell forward instead of backwards.
Yep.
Where I'm like, how does your momentum carry you that way? But besides that, I mean, man, so good.
Yeah.
Just like really, really spectacular in like all facets of the game.
No, which is like is. Anyone he's who's like, oh, Ric Flair is not. That's why he's been not, one of my all-time favorites forever.
Yeah, and like I don't get you. Sometimes you see people that are like, "Yeah, he's not one of the best ever," and you're like, "No, no because you're talking about 2006 Ric Flair."
Yeah, no, he is. He really is. When you go back and you watch those late '80s, early '90s, especially '80s through the Jim Crockett era, NWA when he was, you know, at his peak, fuck, no one could touch him.
No,
no one could touch him.
Yeah, and I mean, like his matches told great stories.
Yep.
He, I mean. Look, he got good matches out of fucking Luger.
He got good matches out of a lot of guys. Yeah. He couldn't believe he was getting a good match out of, so.
Yeah.
But all in all, after discussing it with you, when it comes to Capital Combat, my overall rating is still, I felt like a lot of the matches went on longer than they should have.
Okay.
But it was not as bad as I thought it was going to be when we picked it out.
Right. You know what? That was my initial comments to you. We're not very happy that that was the event.
Yeah, I know. Something about but, mother, this, and F and that. Yeah. But no, it was definitely not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I mean, the RoboCop segment was still shitty, as I remember.
Right. Some of it was crap. And maybe a couple of the matches did go on a few minutes too long. And but overall.
The talent on the show. Yeah. Holy crap. I mean. You'd be hard-pressed to be doing much better. I mean, again, you know, Arn and Barry didn't wrestle, but they've still made an appearance, I guess. But they just, I mean, they, a lot of the top tag teams of that era were on this show. And, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, there were, like, at least 15 Hall of Famers on that card.
Oh, I believe that,
on the card, not even counting, you know, like, Arn and the Horsemen and, you know, people who were, you know, just running in and stuff. Like, this. Every single match had Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Or, I mean, well, look, The Undertaker's not in yet. You know he's going to be. Or
potential future ones, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I don't know. It was great. It was great.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
I would rate this on, like, a school grade scale.
Yeah.
I would give this probably a B+.
I can agree with that.
It had enough that I enjoyed.
Yep.
That outweighed the stuff that I wasn't so happy with.
And, you know, ultimately, if I want to compare it to, like, say, SummerSlam from this year,
I enjoyed
this
more.
So much more I had problems with SummerSlam than this card.
What the thing I liked about this, and I'm glad I picked 90, and I'm not glad that this was the event. I was hoping for, like, you know, SummerSlam or something good. But this reminded me of why I loved wrestling as a kid.
Yep.
It was like you know, the whole feel of everything was so different than it is now. And like, you could really get engrossed in watching a match, and every single match had a good story where you're like, God damn it. Like, he made that tag. Like, let him get the tag. Yeah. Don't keep throwing him out of the ring. You know,
okay.
These guys are cheating. Like, come on.
And
it's
it was,
like,
a lot of it
that happens and you're like, meh.
A lot of it was the little things too. Like, all right, in the tag match with Mike Rotunda and Tommy Wildfire Rich, there's one point where Rotunda kind of takes a bump. They collide, and he takes a bump, and he's been desperate for the tag for quite a while, but he hasn't been able to make it. And then he's getting up, and he realizes, oh, he's too close to his corner, and he kind of like turns the other way, like he's that dazed and confused that he's trying to, you know, he's going to the. He didn't realize he was so close to his partner, and you've seen that done a bunch of times in matches. But the timing and the delivery and how he did that, phenomenal. When he realizes, oh, shit, my partner's over there, and he turns and tries to kind of dive out to grab him, but the bad guy's already there to pull him away. I mean,
right.
It looked so crisp and good because Mike Rotunda is awesome.
And not only that, there was – like nowadays, you never – I don't want to say never. A lot of the time in tag matches
– yeah.
You don't see actual tags.
No.
You see people back towards the corner and their partner tags
slaps
themselves.
Slaps them on the back. Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know when that became a thing. I remember it happening more often
than
not. Well,
the Brainbusters used to do it like a blind tag type of thing.
But with this, every single tag was a legit tag.
Yeah.
And there were times that I really enjoyed in this where, you know, like the Freebirds would be getting like their asses kicked for a minute. And then, like, Michael Hayes would go into the corner and just talk to Ronnie Garvin. Like, what are we doing? You know, you could see they're, you know, strategizing or whatever.
Right.
And then he would turn back around and go back into the fight.
Yep.
Nowadays, that would be happening. And before he even got there, Ronnie Garvin would smack him on the head and jump in the ring himself and go get his ass kicked also. Instead, you know, like these teams, there was like in every match, there were moments when the teams would be talking to each other. You know, hey, what are we doing? What can we fix? What, you know, what's going on?
Yep.
Things like that. Instead of nowadays when it's just like, well, I know I have a tag team partner, but it's basically two singles matches happening at the same time. Occasionally we'll do like an arm drag together.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's one thing. I mean, look, the New Day is spectacular. I think they're the only team these days that do things like that. Maybe because they're the only team with, you know, a sort of manager. I don't know.
Well, the Revival.
You know what? They've been hurt, so they haven't been on TV a bit.
Fair enough.
But, like, even the Hardy Boys don't do it. They've been around for 70 years.
Yeah.
But, like, none of the new teams.
No.
None of them. And it's like that's why tag team wrestling's suffering now. It doesn't feel like teams.
Right.
Even the teams that are teams don't feel like teams half the time.
Yeah, I hate it when they just throw two guys together and then come up with, like Jericho.
Right.
I hated that. You know, I really did. To me, we go back to tag team wrestling, and I just did a couple blog posts on it, the last match, tag teams of the WWE of the 80s, you know, and
yep.
I'm talking about, like, you know, the Rockers and...
Yeah, man, Strikeforce
and Power and Glory and Demolition and teams that had a team name... They had outfits that matched or were similar, and they did tandem moves that made sense.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, and we, you, just the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors, the Fabulous Freebirds, Doom, the Steiner Brothers.
Yeah.
Talk like, about, a, I mean, holy shit.
Six amazing tag teams.
You know?
Like, all-time great tag teams.
Yeah.
You have six of them on the same, on the same
like,
thing.
I didn't remember this card being the way it was. You know, like I remember, and what it is like, it's the RoboCop moment that stands out so much as being so terrible that it really does drag the whole card down.
Yep.
When you think back about it, but yeah, I think it's hilarious how annoyed you were when this was randomly picked, and then it's just like, all right, this was nowhere near as bad as I thought it would be.
Nowhere near as bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this way more. Way, way more than I was expecting to.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, the RoboCop moments stand out. And I don't remember that, you know, Doom and the Steiner brothers had like a great match, you know, or that, you know, Pillman was like awesome, or like any of that stuff. You don't remember any of it because all they ever talk about, oh yeah, Capital Combat, Turner RoboCop.
Yep.
Only thing that would have made it better is if like you said, Barry Windham was in a match, because he's like one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, same here. If Barry or Arn were in a match together, it would be a lot better.
Yeah.
So, but anywho, I think that wraps up for me.
Yeah, I'm good.
Today, cool. So we're on social media platforms. We're on the Facebook. We're on the Twitter. You know, I'm at Superstar Mel.
I am at Aaron S. Bell.
Ronnie's RonBar316. The show on Facebook is was it Podcast of 1,000 Holds? Is that the Facebook handle?
I think so.
Cool, cool. And then there's a Twitter handle.
1,000 Holds Pod.
I think you got it right this time.
Yeah.
So anyways, awesome. Yeah, thanks.
That's a podcast!
Oh my god, it's been so long!